Welcome to the U.S. National Privacy Legislation Podcast. This is Joy Mason Intriago, Managing Director of the Association for Data and Cyber Governance. You can find us online at adcg.org. We are very excited to offer this timely event, which is just one part of our ongoing effort to inform the data and cyber governance community on timely topics. ADCG is a community of data and cyber governance professionals who are charged with the governance aspects of data privacy, data protection, and cybersecurity. Check us out and join this growing and multifaceted group. Let's get started. Our moderators are Jerry Buckley and Jody Westby, who are both ADCG advisory board members and very engaged on this topic. Jerry Buckley is a founder of Buckley LLP, a national financial services law firm based in Washington. Described by Chambers as a recognized dean of the Consumer Financial Services Bar, Jerry serves as counsel to the Financial Services Trade Association's Data Protection Working Group. Prior to entering private practice, he served as minority staff director of the U.S. Senate Banking Committee. Jody Westby is CEO of Global Cyber Risk and also serves as adjunct professor at Georgia Institute of Technology's School of Computer Science. Ms. Westby chairs the American Bar Association's Privacy and Computer Crime Committee, is co-chair of the ABA's Cybercrime Committee, and is an appointed member to the ABA President's Cybersecurity Task Force. She is a professional blogger for Forbes and authors a regular column on cybersecurity issues for Leader's Edge magazine. Ms. Westby is the author of several books and articles on cybersecurity, cyber conflict, and enterprise security programs. Thank you, Jerry and Jody, for leading this podcast, and I'll turn it over to you. Welcome, Jerry and Jody. Let's get started.
Well, thank you, Joy, and it's a pleasure to be a part of this podcast series. Will the United States, the largest economy in the world, establish national privacy and data security standards? There's no question the standards have been and are being established. The issue is whether there will be uniform standards across the United States, or whether privacy and data security in America will be governed by a series of state enactments, as well as, in some instances, by an interaction with the EU General Data Protection Regulation, the GDPR. Jody and I are partnering to present this series of podcasts because we believe that this issue will continue to be of importance over the next few years and beyond, and it will probably be one of the more important issues confronting Congress and the next administration, no matter how the election results come out. Both Jody and I admit to a disposition in favor of uniform national privacy data protection standards, but we realize there are varying opinions on this issue, and fair consideration must be given to all points of view. National standards will only be arrived at, if they are at all, by a general consensus. We intend to present these podcasts by interviewing guests from different points of view. Our guests will include privacy advocates, legislators, regulators, corporate leaders, and academic and legal experts. We're grateful to the ADCG for providing a forum for these discussions. It's consistent with ADCG's mission of being a neutral forum where ideas can be discussed and people can be educated. So I turn it over to Jody to introduce our guest today.
Good afternoon. It's my pleasure to introduce to you one of the foremost leaders in the privacy and cybersecurity arena, and that is Daniel Soloff, who is the John Marshall Harlan Research Professor of Law at the George Washington University Law School. Dan's also the founder of Teach Privacy, a company that provides privacy and data security training programs to businesses, law firms, healthcare institutions, schools, and other organizations. And I can tell you, he has a unique ability to come up with cartoons that just completely encapsulate a requirement and make it simple to understand and easy to remember. He's really quite a humorist behind all of this legal work that he does. Dan's one of the world's leading experts in privacy law, and he's the author of more than 10 books and textbooks and more than 50 articles. His articles have appeared in the Harvard Law Review, the Yale Law Journal, Stanford Law Review, and Columbia Law Review, just among many others. Professor Solov writes at LinkedIn as one of its thought leaders and has more than 1 million followers, and he routinely blogs at Privacy Plus Security blog and is the founder, along with Paul Schwartz, of the Privacy Plus Security Forum and the Privacy and Security Salons that he holds. So Dan, it's just such a pleasure to have you as one of our inaugural speakers for this podcast series. You're so well-respected, and you're such a giant in this space. I want to just start off with asking you, with the passage of the California Consumer Protection Act and preceding that, the European General Data Protection Regulation, we had last week the European Court of Justice invalidating the U.S. Privacy Shield. So with all of that swirling around, we're hearing more and more calls for a federal privacy law. I want to ask you, is that now more likely that we will get a federal privacy law than before? Where do you think we stand now?
Well, I would generally think that a federal privacy law has always been a long shot. I think that today it's our best climate ever, for one. So this really goes back for 20, 30 years, especially in the early 2000s when there was a big call for a federal privacy law to deal with the burgeoning internet and all the related issues that were happening then. The EU in the mid-90s had come out with the EU Data Protection Directive, which is the precursor to today's GDPR, and had an adequate standard, which is a standard that required that US law be adequate in its protection of privacy, to have an adequate level of protection. There were only a few companies at the time that supported a comprehensive federal privacy law. Right now in the US, we have a bunch of sectoral laws dealing with particular industry sectors, but we really lack what the EU has, as well as most other countries, which is a comprehensive privacy law. Back around the early 2000s, most in industry were against this. The effort really didn't go anywhere. Although there were various bills in Congress, nothing really happened. Flash forward to today, and I think a few things have changed the landscape a lot. One is the GDPR, which now is the global standard for privacy. I think we're also seeing over the years that the real leader in privacy is the EU. The rest of the world is following the EU model. The companies are modeling their privacy practices and their privacy policies on the GDPR. They're using the GDPR terms. They're doing the GDPR requirements. They're looking to what the EU regulators are saying as far as how they're behaving and developing their policies. So in essence, the US has ceded its leadership in privacy to Europe. And also to California, because California has passed a law in 2018, the California Consumer Privacy Act, the CCPA for short, and that has a number of requirements for companies, and that has sparked a lot of legislation in various other states on privacy as well. And industry is realizing that being governed by 50 different laws, as well as the GDPR, and getting no credit for the world seeing the U.S. privacy law as a mess, that it might make sense to have a comprehensive federal privacy law. So industry has come around, and I find it very interesting, especially to see the response from industry to embrace the idea of a federal comprehensive privacy law. That is dramatically different than it was 20 years ago. However, now Congress is at one of its most dysfunctional periods in its history. So I feel that although the climate is right for it, although privacy advocates want a federal privacy law, although industry wants a federal privacy law, the problem is Congress has to actually be up to the task. And I'm worried that Congress isn't. So I think that we certainly have the right climate for it. The question is, you know, when will Congress have the maturity to actually pull it off? And right now, I think it's difficult because there are a lot of tricky trade-offs and compromises that have to be made in a comprehensive law. And even a few of those is hard to do. Doing a lot of them is going to be very hard. So it is like climbing Mount Everest to pull this off.
Dan, this is Jerry. And I wonder first, with the lack of a designated administration spokesman in this administration, I don't know what will happen in the next. You don't have leadership from the executive branch side. And perhaps if there were more leadership on that side and more guidance, there might be a possibility of bringing parties together. The executive branch, you know, does play that role sometimes when Congress is floundering. The second thing is, I wanted to ask you, what do you think will make up the elements of federal legislation? Do you think that the GDPR and CCPA will be basically the framework for federal legislation? Has the industry moved to accept the fact that this is de facto a standard now, and so therefore agreeing to it in federal legislation would not be as big a problem as it was when there was nothing? What are your thoughts?
I think that, yes, just practically speaking, if we have a federal law that really does not encompass a lot of the CCPA and GDPR, then it's meaningless. Because what would be the point of a federal law that wouldn't satisfy these standards? Companies that are operating at a global level have to comply with the GDPR. And a lot of the GDPR requirements are structural requirements about how they structure their privacy program, how they know their data, how they document things, and more. So they're already going to have to be doing a lot of this stuff anyway. So if you pass a weak federal privacy law, it really won't really change much at all. It'll just be ignored and largely irrelevant. So the law has to be meaningful. The same thing with the CCPA. The law has to come close to what the CCPA is trying to do. If not, it won't stop other states from trying to pass similar laws. Or it will be very hard to get states that have a lot of market power, states like California, New York, and others, to agree to preemption. Why would California want to give up its power in defining an issue that it cares about, give that up to a federal government for a much weaker, less effective law? And we have a very strong number of representatives from California. So it's very unlikely we're going to see anything get through the House that would basically be a law that would nullify the CCPA. So the law is going to have to encompass these things. It might not have to do everything that the CCPA and GDPR do, but it's going to have to come close if it's going to be a meaningful privacy law that would do the job.
Well, you know, there are some who would say that even CCPA doesn't go far enough, particularly even if you have an opt-in. Do you really understand what is happening with your data and how much control do you have over it and what can be done with it? So do you think that if we have a change in the political complexion of the Congress and the administration, there will be other issues on the table as well?
I'm not a huge fan of the CCPA because I think it does rely a lot on notice and choice and a lot on what I call privacy self-management. In essence, there are three approaches to regulating privacy, and different laws rely on different ones. One approach is what I call privacy self-management. Another one is called governance and documentation. And the last one is having more substantive regulation, more specific restrictions, specific regulation of use. So self-management is the predominant approach to privacy in the United States. And that works by you. Companies are required to provide notice of what they're doing with privacy and how they're going to collect and use your information. And then it's left up to people who are given various rights to opt out of it or opt into it, to set privacy controls, to essentially manage their privacy. The problem with this approach is that privacy is so immensely complicated that it's really hard for people to make the risk decisions on their privacy. It's incredibly difficult for people to do that. And it doesn't scale. The fact is that, you know, I can maybe do my privacy settings on one or two sites, but I can't do it on 1,000 companies. So the CCPA gives people a right to get information about all the data that companies have collected about them and who they've shared it with and how they're using it and all the specific pieces of the data. And so when people get this, they have to not just get it from one company, but they really want to find out what's going on. They should get it from every company, but that could be hundreds or thousands of companies. And so are people going to spend all this time making requests to hundreds and hundreds of companies for this? And then they get this data and they get this data dump. Okay, here's all this stuff. How are they going to make sense of it? How are they going to understand what it means and what really is happening behind the scenes? They're really going to spend the hours and weeks and months of time it's going to take to actually figure this all out? It just is not practical. It doesn't scale.
Yeah. So Dan, it strikes me that your thought might be that the person who is the subject of the privacy protection might be able to set a dial and say, this is my tolerance for use of my information. And at that point, anyone who has their information has to live by where they have set their dial. And that has consequences for them in terms of availability of services and goods, but they would be able to set their own dial. How about that?
Unfortunately, I think it's too simple because privacy has different implications on different sites. Privacy on a social media site could have different implications than privacy in a product you buy on Amazon. It's all different about, you know, what data is shared with other companies, what data is shared potentially with the government, what data is shared with the public, what are the various risks and implications from all these different technologies. So it's hard to set a dial because it's a different set of risks. If I post something on social media about where I'm going on vacation, that's a different risk than if I'm using a smart doorbell or I'm using a home assistant device or other things. So I think it's tricky because privacy is not just one thing, it's many different things. It's so complex.
Thank you. That's a very interesting insight. Go ahead, Jody.
Dan, how do we turn this oil tanker around? I mean, in the US, we have had these companies just spoiled by being able to do the little bit they had to do. Yes, they have to comply with GDPR, but they're largely resistant, don't want to do that any more than they have to. And I get your point. I mean, we are behind. The EU seized the stage on privacy, and I think they're about to seize the stage on cybersecurity. And there's been a real gap in US leadership. But are there other efforts underway? I mean, what's happening to help turn the thinking, to help steer thinking and thoughts? What are you involved in? What do you know about out there you can tell us about?
Sure. Well, there's a couple other things when it comes to privacy regulation. I talked about self-management, which alone just doesn't really do it. I think you're still giving people rights and information is important. The other model is a governance and documentation model. That's the GDPR's model, where it requires privacy officers, policies, documentation of how information is being used. And this is good. It can be helpful. A lot of this can, you know, look great on paper, but still have a major privacy incident. And then the last thing, you could focus on uses. You could regulate certain uses that are beyond the norm. And I think you have to have all three of these things to have effective privacy law. You need self-management, you need governance and documentation, and you need regulation of use. So really, you're going to need kind of something from all of these dimensions to have effective privacy regulation. I've worked on a project with the American Law Institute, known as the ALI for short. It's a project that we've been working on for about 7 years. We just finished it up last year. And it essentially is a project that has kind of like a model law or a model standard on privacy. And it addresses a lot of the privacy issues and the challenge there, we really wanted to create a compromise. It's not what I would have created if I were writing on a blank slate, if I were making the perfect law, because I would do things differently. What I tried to do was in this project, and my co-reporter was Professor Paul Schwartz of Berkeley, what we tried to do was we tried to take the U.S. system and try to push it as far as we could push it, consistent with basic commitments in U.S. law, to be as close to the EU as we could, and also to address some of the shortcomings and problems in our current privacy regime, problems with notice and with self-management. I think we were able to reach a good compromise. It's, again, it's not perfect. It wouldn't be what I would write if I were king of the universe, but it was something that we wanted to take something that would be plausible, workable, also something that would evolve. You really can't just set a law in stone and it's going to work forever and ever. You have to constantly evolve the privacy law. And if you look at privacy laws today versus privacy laws 20 years ago, they're radically different. There are so many things in privacy laws today that weren't really in existence in privacy laws long ago. So I think that you need a law that can grow with technology and with the way things change, but still be strong and effective. And so we tried our best with that compromise. And I think we were able to come up with a good compromise. And there's certainly other compromises that can be made, but I do think it is possible for us to push the law further, even without reaching perfection. There's a lot of room for development.
Dan, the ALI is usually respected, and of course you are too, for your leadership. But how have you gone about getting this in the hands of policymakers in the Congress? Is there a place where you feel that you've been able to get an audience, either in the Congress or at the FTC or elsewhere, so that this can get some legs?
We've sent it to a number of folks that we know, and we've tried to publicize it. We've even written a law review article about the project. It's available for free on SSRN. Anyone can download it. So we've tried to get the information out there. I think one of the challenges is that now there are a lot of different proposals out there. There's so many companies and organizations that are trying to propose federal privacy legislation. So there's a lot of competing proposals out there. One thing that we really tried to do in our proposal was there's a lot to it that explains the choices that we made. We made certain choices based on our understanding of the history of these issues, the history of the law and its development around the world. And so the choices we made were very deliberate. We also created this project not in a vacuum, but with a group of advisors who came from academia, the judiciary, as well as from private practice and industry. So we had a lot of folks advising on this. I'm really surprised at the amount of consensus that we reached on a lot of the issues in the group. There were some differences, but there was a surprising amount of consensus. And I feel like, you know, having done that, you know, we've come up with an approach that we thought moved the ball forward a lot. And we hope that, you know, people will pay attention to it. It's just that there's so much out there now that's competing for the attention of folks. And I often see proposals and legislation and bills that really don't address a lot of the proposals out there. They don't address a lot of the existing literature. I think a lot of the stuff being proposed that I see just throws out something without really much analysis behind it. So one law, for example, is proposing that there be a new federal agency to regulate privacy. Well, I think that the FTC has done a really good job of this. And what I would have liked to see is a little bit more, why do we need another federal agency? It's just quick and easy to just throw that out there as some magical solution, but it's not clear it would solve it. I think that really understanding how the FTC is structured, what it can do, what it can't do, what it's done well and what it hasn't done, then I think, you know, it would make sense to come up with a proposal like that. But from what I've seen, a lot of the stuff just doesn't really do that kind of analysis. It just throws out an idea that is half-baked. But there's actually a lot of points of information and a lot to go on when it comes to the FTC and where it succeeded and where it hasn't. But there's a lot of things about the FTC that are actually quite good and quite strong. And I'm not sure that the grass is greener with a brand new agency. If anything, I think it might be a lot weaker and more troubled with a different agency than the FTC. So I think that, you know, there's just a lot of stuff going on, but there also is a lot of literature, a lot of writing on privacy, a lot of analysis and lessons learned in the field over the course of the last 20, 30 years that I wish, whether it be our project or just more generally than that, I wish the policymakers would study it more, would consult with it more, because a lot of the things they're proposing and a lot of the ideas that I see, they've been explored already. And the literature shows which things are going to work and which things are not going to work. And it's somewhat frustrating to me when I see certain proposals and I know this is just not going to work. And it's pretty clear that if someone had read a lot of the literature and really understood what was going on, they would understand that. But I still feel like just a lot of amateur proposing stuff without really understanding it.
Well, that's why we need people like you who can take a lot of that material that you have read and studied and distill it down into those speeches from here to the elevator door to get it across to the legislators and the policymakers. But it's going to be an interesting road for us ahead. And we can't thank you enough for taking the time to be one of our inaugural speakers today and help launch this podcast series. I suspect we're going to be back with you for a repeat performance, but we thank you, Daniel Solov, for your time and your expertise and your dedication to this field.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks for joining us this week on U.S. National Privacy Legislation. Make sure to visit our website, adcg.org, where you can subscribe to the show in Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Overcast, Pocket Cast, or via RSS, so you'll never miss an episode. While you're at it, if you found value in what you heard today, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes. Or if you'd simply tell a friend about the podcast, that would help us out too. Also, you might want to subscribe to our weekly newsletter, Data and Cyber Governance Alert, which you can do right on our homepage. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode where we dig deeper into the possibilities of U.S. national privacy legislation.